stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone!
Oh, God, it's finally time to talk about the racing.
Who'd have thought it?
Mate.
You are the world champion!
Welcome to episode 122 of the Motorsport 101 podcast, or as I like to call it, 121.5, basically. Again, as we mentioned, it was kind of a spur of the moment thing to break this up into two, because the grid goal talk we had in episode 121 went on a fair bit longer than, you know, we expected.
It is a lot to unpack, and we want to thank, especially Hazel Southwark, our lovely guest who is returning for this episode, as well as our super sub Zoe Hamilton, for just helping guide us along. And we hope that our discussion was able to just, like, shed some insight, you know, maybe change a few opinions, and just be entertaining as well.
It's almost like they never left or something. But, should we talk about some of the actual racing itself now? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? You know, is that a thing? Let's talk a little bit of... besides F1, because there wasn't much to talk about besides that, really. But let's talk a little bit about Formula E, because we had, what was it, round four of their championship?
Yes, round four.
Yeah, round four. Round four of the Formula E championship in Santiago. Guys, like, bad news for fans of the Grand Tour, because the cheater actually won something, but it's the other cheater. It's T-Cheater! And he had a 1-2 finish!
And I'm
how about that?
I'm so stunned that this is the first ever 1-2 in this series. Like, I'm really surprised that this is the first time.
I was curious about that.
Anyone's
I'm not at all surprised that it's the first ever 1-2.
You think you're...
Formula E is really interesting for, like, if you look at any of the, it's very rare, apart from the people at the back of the grid, for teammates to end up qualifying or finishing close to each other.
Like, it's really not genuinely rare. It's weird, because, like, I remember, like, I was watching the race and I saw the 1-2, and I immediately thought, like, has there actually been a 1-2 finish in Formula E before? And I couldn't think of one, so I thought that... So it turns out I was right. It turns out that there hasn't been one before, and, this is the very first one, and it turns out, like, our friend and yours, everybody's favourite, Jev, leads the way.
Thought this was his first career Grand Prix victory, only to realize he won in Montreal.
Yeah, he won in Montreal. Mm-hmm. I was there. Hazel was there.
Nobody talked
Montreal,
about that, of course.
I was in the media center with Luke Smith, and, like, I can't remember literally which of us said this, but, like, one of us was like, it would be really Jev to win when, like, nobody gives a shit. he did that. Yeah.
He did that indeed.
Which, like, there was a perfect storm of things that happened this weekend, one of which is that I wasn't in Santiago, which is why I couldn't record this. rather than just, like, dribbling on something full of jet lag. Kylie was there, Kylie Minogue, and Jev won, which are, like, that's two of my goddamn favourite things.
Hazel, you didn't jinx one of your favourites for once. I'm actually very impressed. You, like, the curse of Southwell didn't rear its ugly head here.
No,
sort of.
Apart no, from,
well,
me
it,
not being
it, 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 it did a little bit with Mitch Evans having a bad weekend.
The curse of Southwell. I mean, the curse of Southwell did claim many faves, like Sandberg crashing in Superpole and things.
Mitch Evans
can we
as well.
Talk about all the crashes in qualifying, because that was kind of so Formula E.
Oh, God.
Like, I have probably never seen a more perfectly timed piece of comic television than when Jack Nicholls and Dario Franchitti's commentary like hit a crescendo of panic and excitement as Andre Lotterer, the last out in Super Pole because he had the fastest time in group qualifying. And like we can talk about the fact that Andre has completely stepped up his fucking game in a minute, but like him coming out just as they're like, and it can Lotterer is the only person who could beat his teammate, and like basically as they said teammate, he just like perfectly stacked it into the ball. It was incredible. I've in some ways I've never seen anything. I mean, if he was I would respect if he did it deliberately, because like it was a beautiful and pure moment in Formula E's history. And like I've been really worried about Formula E, for partly because I work in it, and so like professionally I'm quite invested, but also like just concerned because like we've got all these manufacturers coming in and like all of their like proper dudes and whatever, and like maybe we're gonna like have to be boring and like proper now. And every single race of season 4 has been like increasing the level of hysteria and like general bonkersness in Formula E.
It's like if you thought the first season was crazy, they were like, now we're gonna beat that.
Yeah, I mean, like it's literally like hold my magnum of GH mom, like watch this, guys.
Like cutting to an aerial shot and then like seeing a shot 2 seconds later of Andre Lotterer literally plowing into the back of his own man. oh my god.
Yeah, I mean it's not even almost mounting, which is always a great thing. It's just ramming straight up the tail end of your teammate.
Yep. Lotterer went in dry,
plowing
and
down the straight and just plunging into the back of your teammate.
Were you on for a bet, Hazel, at how many sexual innuendos you can get into one episode? Because
no,
you're doing quite well so far.
Welcome to the thirst cast.
We're recording a two-parter now, and I've had 2 glasses of wine, so I'm sorry.
I love that the Charlie's listening to our Discord just goes, Hazel, this isn't your fanfic. And it's like... Are you sure about that?
This is not alternate universe 1372 of the Formula E World Championship because we disapproved of the start times.
Is that the reality where Dario wears a black t-shirt instead of a white t-shirt?
Yeah. It's one of several, in fact. There's a few where he wears tie-dye.
Those are dark universes. I don't know, though. I mean, like, maybe there's a universe... There's almost, like, part of me where it's, like, there'd probably be a universe out there where we don't need Formula E because, actually, we didn't spend the 20th century destroying the planet. Instead, we invented good, efficient battery technology and all cars are Formula E cars now, or whatever.
Well, I mean, like, the battery technology wouldn't have been, like, viable until, like, the 80s, where, like, we had computer systems, like... good enough to manage, you know, a massive turbocharger, which, like, feeds every F1 fanboy's, like, wet dreams, but we also have, you know, battery technology.
That's true. I mean, like, battery technology is the main thing that's holding back wide-scale electric vehicle development. Battery technology is also why the 20th century was so reliant on carbon fuel. Because it was literally cheaper and easier to combust things in, like, just the most absolutely brutally inefficient way. I mean, if you look at the process of combustion, it is basically the same process as goes on in a steam train, with a bit more fancy teching. But we went to
the moon with that shit.
Well, no, I know, but, like, how? Like compared to the incredible efficiency of electrical power for this kind of thing, and like the first electric vehicles were actually invented over 100 years ago, or in the 1800s. It's just that without any real way of storing large enough amounts of energy,
Yeah, because up until like
batteries are an arse ache to develop.
Yeah, because up
we've
until
just
like
never gone there.
Yeah, up until like the 1910s, like the world land speed record were held by electric cars.
Yeah, yeah, and like I can't think what point I was going to make here. Just like, yeah. It's a shame that we're only just getting around to it, but also that it's really great racing whilst we're doing it.
It's true. But yeah. Let's talk about shitty reliability. Audi.
Lucas Degrassi is Lucas is 4 for 4 on mechanical retirements this season. That is like a Toro Rosso level of like being up shit creek. And Audi, I think they said the other day, they have, like, literally zero explanation as to how Lucas's title defense is now pretty much already up in smoke.
We're a third of the way through the season, and Lucas Degrassi, the defending champion, has 0 points.
It's the mango livery. They shouldn't have ditched it.
No.
It is.
Yeah,
that is what the made the cars go.
It's as Catherine pointed out the other day, friend of the show, it's like, you know, it's a bad sign when Jerome D'Ambrosio has more points than you.
yeah.
I think
there's two things that have really fucked with Audi.
Go on.
One of them is I genuinely think Lucas is distracted this season.
Yes, he definitely is.
He's distracted. Some of this is on Lucas. And Lucas is obsessive, and very insistent. But he is also quite like, Lucas doesn't bat to lose. Lucas had essentially had the team built around him. I know it had Daniel's name on it, but the team was very much built around Degrassi. And the Audi team is not really, actually. It's an Audi team that's built around doing things that Audi want to do. And that, I think, has changed a few dynamics within it. I think they have obviously had quite substantial... It's not like full personnel change, and Schaeffler are still making the powertrain, but there have been some shuffles. Franco Chiacchetti left, and he was a very important part of the team, and I think you do have to look at that, and then look at the fact that they have reliability issues. They also have straight up stupidity issues, like the thing with Daniel's car in Hong Kong should not have happened. There should not have been the wrong part in the car. So even though he gained no racing advantage from it, it's fundamentally banned in the rules to put a different part than the barcode that you said would be in there in the car.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stuff that's going on. You can see the fact that Daniel is very, very focused is rewarding him with better
results.
Yes, than Lucas. So
and still has time to crack great jokes.
Don't take away from him. He has consistently been ahead of Lucas in. So Santiago was the first race this year where he has not embarrassingly outqualified Lucas. And I think, you know, Daniel is very, very motivated this year. He's taking the Audi factory drive thing very seriously. The team, it's lots of little things. And Formula E is really difficult. You rock up, you get one day to build, maybe 2 days to build. You have to sort everything out. Parc Fermé hits pretty early, so you really need to have those cars in good shape. And you just have to have everything, like there's no margin for error in a single race day on the driver's parts, on the engineer's parts, on the general setup of the team, and there's very few people in the garage. You're only allowed 20 members of staff in the garage, and it's a real challenge. And the margin of making it work is so tiny that you can see both Audi and Renault, who have dominated the first 3 years in terms of the teams. There's never been... So the situation we had going into Marrakesh, where neither Sebastian Buemi nor Lucas Segrassi had a single point, you had never reached race three of a Formula E season without both of them having had a podium previously. I don't know what it is in Renault. Probably the fact that they're leaving and resource has been pulled out a bit in advance of Nismo taking over the team. But both of the teams are pretty stricken, and they have just lost that very fine control that made it work. And you can see that Mahindra, that DS Virgin, that Tachita have stepped into that gap, and that is what makes the difference at the end of the day. If you've got a fairly competitive powertrain, I mean, there's no fucking helping Andretti. They're just screwed.
Yeah.
Just stop mounting it transverse.
we're now in the crazy situation where Tachita not only lead the driver's championship, but they also lead the team's championship, which is weird.
Which they are the only customer team.
Yeah, they're the only customer team, and they lead the team's championship.
I think their team being 50% Dre's is absolutely the defining factor in this, personally.
Please. We need more Andre-related content on the show. This show demands it.
Don't look at me, man. I put in my fair share. At least I like to think so. But,
Andre, previous to this weekend, and I think this might still stand, but I'd need to run the numbers again. But relative to the number of Formula E sessions that he had participated in, he had the highest number of highest percentage of disqualifications ever seen within Formula E. Because he kept parking the car in the wrong place and doing stupid shit and whatever. Andre in Hong Kong compared to Andre in Santiago. So, yeah, Tachita are a customer team. They don't get the manufacturer testing time. They only had the Valencia test. That is the only time pre-Hong Kong that Andre had driven the car. Hong Kong was a write-off for him. He was pretty composed about it. And I think, it was sort of to be expected. By Marrakesh, it was obvious he was becoming frustrated. And that he wasn't content to not have mastered it. Which I thought was a potentially good sign. Because Andre is an incredible racer. He's never been in a series where he hasn't won. Apart from Formula One, but that was once. I was wondering when it would kick in. I was not ready for the way in which it kicked in. I don't think anybody was. God, if they hooked up the heart monitors that they put on Alan McNish to Mark Preston, I can guarantee it would have been very alarming. I really thought they were going to smash each other up, and I was quite into it. At the same time as gripping my face and screaming. God.
Are you sure this isn't your fanfic?
I don't know why everyone thinks this of me.
I would know that I wasn't prepared for the way Andre Lotter stepped his game up, because I was watching something entirely different at the time all this was going on, and all of a sudden I hear Andre Lotter is in Super Pole. What? Andre Lotter is fighting for the lead. What?
Yeah.
And the sound of a man that's done that before, may I add. Oh god.
And I don't know, this whole situation to me, it really just really paints a picture that anyone could be driver's champion this year. Well, except if you won the championship before. Besides that, anyone could be driver's champion this year.
Yeah, it's like, except for Lucas, obviously. But
you say that like Nelsinho Piquet is not fifth in the standings right now.
Yeah, and Buemi is fourth.
We haven't even mentioned Felix coming from 16th to finish in 4th. A real champion's drive. The one that could, you know, if Felix goes all the way this year, which is looking fairly likely at the moment, the way Mahindra's going, I mean, that they pulled that 4th out of the fire this weekend. I mean, the way it's going, they could look back on this performance as one, well, and say, you know, it could have been won here at Santiago, given that Mahindra were having a real dog's dinner of a weekend until the race happened. Yeah.
I mean, also, Mitch Evans came from the dead last of the grid with a 10-second time penalty, and he made up a phenomenal number of places, which, like, he has been really quick in qualifying, but kind of not quite as able to manage the like race as well as Nelson has in the first 3 rounds.
Mitch was driving like he just heard that there was a 2-for-1 sale on pastel khaki shorts at Hollister, baby.
Oh yeah. Somebody had said there was some, you know, like some new Instagram stickers only available if you scored points this race, and my God, he was going to get them. But yeah, he came from 20th to 7th. Mind you, there were 6 retirements.
Yeah.
It helps.
But I think you shouldn't have to say mind you that there were 6 retirements, because just being able to finish is, you know, an accomplishment.
Considering, yeah, I mean, that given was that, 2 cars out at the start of the race.
Yeah.
Nick, what were you doing?
It's okay, they shook hands about it, they were cool at the end.
They were.
Yeah, Nick's going to buy Daniel a beer. Everything will be fine. Nick will probably make some really witty video about it on Twitter at some point. You know, taking the leaf out of the Andretti book of throwing shade at the Grand Tour. You know, we will settle this one way or another. Like gentlemen. But, yeah, it certainly helps. But, whew. It was a loaded race, but before we got into the weekend, we haven't even mentioned a couple extra things. Well, Tichita and Dragon Racing getting €15,000 fines. They tweaked with the safety harness. Apparently, this is in the wake of the new rules. This was the first weekend where the minimum pit stop time was removed, and fines for everybody, yo. Fines for everybody.
Yeah, so
so a lot of people were like, this is really inconsistent, because like normally, because Formula E are so brutal with penalties given how few races there are. Like, you know, Daniel's disqualification. And over a technicality that absolutely gave him no on-track advantage. It could have in later rounds given him an on-track advantage, but in the context did not.
I was totally for that, because it happens in bike racing on a semi-often basis. It's like Moto2 Sakanakagami had a podium place taken off him because he had a part that wasn't designated as well, even though it had no performance advantage. So I wasn't all surprised that. I was like, oh well, yeah, if that's happened, he's going to get DQ'd.
Was there any notification to what exactly the modification was? Because it was rumored that it was
a non-standard but still technically safe fitting of the seatbelt. So the seatbelts this race were changed. So Formula E has normally used the quite complex single seater harnesses.
Yeah.
That you would expect to see in, say, F2 or F1 or whatever. Obviously, it is open cockpit racing, so that makes sense. However, they moved to harnesses that you would have more seen in WEC, and specifically when there were the open top prototypes that raced at Le Mans.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Yeah, so it is still suitable for an open top car, But it's just a bit easier to do up, basically, with these sensors.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, the sports car prototype harnesses, they have handles on them. So whether it be a crew member or the driver themselves can actually grip the harness better to strap a driver in quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think basically clever. They like slightly modified the way that they fitted. I'm not really sure. It was in a fashion that the FIA sensor devices that are on the seatbelts still felt that they were properly done up. So by modification, I don't think it can have been particularly massive. It's not like they were saying, like, okay, yeah, we just, like, stick some Velcro on this bit and that's fine. So, yeah, I think whatever it was either a deliberate non-fitting of them or possibly a varied, or just a varied position. Tachita in particular may well have a problem with theirs, which is that Andre is about 3 times the size of any other Formula E driver. The dude is huge compared to the others. I think literally they may genuinely have just like moved some shit around to sort that out. Or they might have been doing one of motorsport's greatest preserves and the way many championships have been won, which is called skillful cheating. Who knows? But yeah, it was an infringement that technically is not actually against the Formula E rules. It's just so it's not in the sporting regulations that you can't do that. It's just that it wasn't the way that they instructed them to do it, which is why they have issued a fine, not a disqualification.
Yeah, so basically gamesmanship.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, yes, that's the phrase we use, isn't it? Not skillful cheating.
Yes. So that was a fun one as well. And before we even had the weekend, Formula E launched their second generation car. And I can't remember the last time a brand new car was met with such universal praise.
Y'all, that damn thing looked like a goddamn wipeout ship. But with wheels.
But with wheels. Oh dear. And I would say
it's a really good car. Like,
yeah, it's definitely a great car. Like, I was not expecting this to be the new Formula E car.
No, I mean, like, because I kind of, I don't know, Formula E has gone in several aesthetic directions, and I do like the cars now, but when they first debuted that whale shark front wing, I was like, holy shit, guys, what the fuck have you done? And like the kind of like dorky side pods that are always falling off during races, I'm like, do we need those? No. The new car, it looks really mean. It is a like street beast, and it looks so mean. Yeah. And I like the way that they've gone for a very like dubstep Sex Panther look. The same way that when Jaguar's car came out and it was like, damn, that looks nicer than anything else. It's a shame that it's going really slow. But yeah, I like that Formula E have just outright. So they did a massive rebrand this year, and a lot of it was very much based on thinking about how to fit into urban environments and how to fit into branding on everything from like street level advertising to the way that you present a patch to sponsors, and taking that on a very different disruptive marketing level, it's not just like slightly weird purple chevrons and the blue chevrons, with the new car, they're clearly continuing to think about themselves as an aesthetic marketing proposition. You have to make the cars look great. It will have more downforce, so it will go faster, It's going to corner like a nasty little bitch.
Yeah.
And there's so many bits that can clearly fly off when they inevitably hit each other.
Despite you know, the series saying that we're not going to release any of the technical specifications until the Geneva Auto Show, one loose-lipped Lucas Degrassi has already stated that it should be capable of, you know, being easily going over 300 kilometers an hour, which is an old money 186 miles an hour. And I'm like,
yikes.
That's, you'd have to get along straight, like, based off of, like, the power increase that, like, it's estimated to be, like, up 67 or so horsepower up on the current car.
Yikes, that's a lot, though, given that they weren't pumping out that much in the first place, and to have a 60 horsepower increase is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Though, my pet peeve with the current car, at first it was rumored that the car was going to have, like, no rear wing, and I was a bit on the fence about that. It seems like they were on the fence, too, and they decided to put a rear wing on it. And I'm like, you could have like, not had the rear wing. It probably would have looked better.
Yo, can we talk about the LED lights in the Halo? If used properly, that shit's going to be dope.
It's not like you're gonna be able to see it. It's not like you're
when
gonna
are we
be...
gonna have a fucking night race? Fucking night race.
It's too busy being like the holding pod to tell the fans that like the ship in front of you's got like missiles or something. Like it's like something in the Wipeout games.
Also, other random pet peeve about the Formula E rebrand. Thing I hate the most, that their new typeface doesn't have lowercase characters, so they decided, let's change the way how we spell EPRI to accommodate that.
they have to make the brand louder, King. Like you have to have capital letters like EPRI. that is the most pretentious nitpick I've ever heard on this show, King. And I've done over 100 episodes now. Like, holy cow. Like, even by your standards, that is bad. Oh, dear, oh, dear. But, yeah, like, I love the look of that car. I can't wait to see it in action. That looks awesome. I really, really can't wait for that.
At Alejandro Agag, so please... Please put blue speed-up pads around the racing line, please.
I'm here for that. Pads.
One thing I have to add is, like, with, like, both IndyCar and Formula E both releasing, like, their next-gen car sort of thing, I love how you had IndyCar look to the past for their inspiration, and Formula E went to the future, and the two of them have came out with these incredible designs. Like, both of them have, like, they look like they should be race cars. They look like they should already be race cars.
Yeah, because I don't want to, like completely, like, be possessed by friend of the show David Land, but it's like, yeah, of course they're going to look so good, because they're spec cars. It doesn't matter how they look.
King is, like, ticking all the that guy quota for the day. Like,
I mean, I love the look of the car, but it's pretty much, yeah... The only reason why we're able to get cars that look so good because they're not really designed to be they are designed to be competitive, but they're not, like, designed to take every single advantage that the technical regulations has.
Right.
I'm fine with this.
Yeah, I'm fine with this. I'm fine with this.
Yeah,
me too, surprisingly.
I mean, there's going to be more spec parts on an F1 car in a few years than there are in FE, certainly, or I suspect IndyCar. I don't actually know very much about IndyCar.
IndyCar, the car is like nearly almost the entire thing spec in IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, by the time you get to. Oh, God. I mean, I know this is harking back to, like, last episode, but people who get, like, really animated about, like, the idea that you're banning something that isn't even being banned. We're so, like, fucking into the idea of banning shark fins, even though they make the cars faster and actually do improve racing. Ugh. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point that actually the fact that you can entirely prescribe the shape of the car means that you can make... you can design something pretty heavily.
Yeah. And it's... I have no issue with spec in certain degrees. Like, I think Formula E does it well, where, like, probably maybe the battery being spec, that's for competition reasons, but, you know, the fact that the powertrains aren't spec is really good, and the fact that the chassis has to be spec makes sure that the teams don't have to spend, like, pointless amounts of money doing aero developments in a series that's supposed to be about electric cars.
Yeah, completely. And I think... I think that there's something incredibly important and which makes Formula E incredibly attractive in the fact that the cost is literally restricted. You know, the new Formula E car will cost, like, I think they were saying, like, $250,000?
Yeah, maybe I think... Less than that? Yeah, I forgot.
I definitely saw a number somewhere around there.
Yeah, Alejandro had said what the new cost cap was going to be for next year. It was about a 40% increase, despite there being, like, less cars.
Yeah. Yeah, and you only have to have three per team and stuff. So you have the two that you use and one spare, I think. Mm. For, you know, if anyone waymies it in FP2. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that would work, actually. But yeah, it's a great car. It's gonna look really mean and really good. And I'm kind of... There's a lot of people who are like, oh, but it still sounds shit.
It's like, well, fuck off. Deal with it.
Yeah, it's... I mean, really, it's just like, oh, what are you doing then? Are you watching, like...
They probably weren't
cars?
Watching anyway. Yeah. Like...
Well, no, exactly. I mean, they're not watching anything, is the thing.
Yeah, they're not, like, watching anything.
The people who say they don't watch F1 anymore because the noise changed, it's like, well, you're not watching F1 then, so... Like,
yeah, so, apparently the numbers for next season, the cost of the, like... Including the cost of the powertrain, which is capped at €250,000, the cars won't exceed €817,000 next year.
You can almost buy a season ticket for F1 races for that sort of money.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Right. What should we talk about next?
Go on, RJ. You can take this one.
Let's talk about the Daytona... 24, no, the Bathurst 12. What about the Bathtona 36?
Bathtona sounds funnier. We'll go with the Bathtona, yeah. 36.
Let's hit the high points here. Fernando Alonso was there for United Autosport at the Daytona 500. The Daytona 24. Wow, we're really jumping the gun on this breaking news.
Yep.
The actual Daytona day. But yes, Fernando Alonso did drive for United Autosports at the Daytona 24 Hours, was arguably not the quickest driver, that would be one Lando Norris, and they were knocked out of contention early. Cadillac just wiped the field with GT, with the prototype class, as you do. Goodness, what else did we see in this one? Ford had a 1-2 finish in GTLM. Which made a lot of people salty, considering they weren't really that quick in the testing, and then all of a sudden, oh, they showed up. And when has Ford ever been accused of gamesmanship in a BOP championship? I'd never heard of such a thing. Scott Dixon also won this race, by the way.
You're all shocked. You're all shocked. Scott Dixon wins. Lol. Basically.
Speaking of gamesmanship in balance of performance, Land Motorsport got a 5-minute stop-and-hold penalty for falling afoul of BOP infraction. There was nothing wrong with their fuel rig. There was nothing illegal. Everything was homologated. But they basically optimized every part of their fit process to where they would take what refueling would take normally 40 seconds. They were able to do it in 35. Now, technically, now again, nothing was illegal with the car or the fuel equipment that they had used. But it was a balance of performance and infraction. It is against the rules, and thus they decided to have a 5-minute stop and hold penalty, which was still debatable.
Yeah. No one liked that. Literally, I hadn't seen anyone defend that.
No. Nobody.
Not even their fellow competitors. Even they were like, well, this is some bullshit.
Lamborghini also won their first 24-hour race, by the way, which is something incredible when you consider how long Lamborghini has been sports car racing. But only in recent years have they ever, like, put a serious push towards it. So good for Lamborghini.
Indeed.
And a week later, we had the Bathurst 12-hour. And boy,
ish.
Of course, the Rolex 24 had a... Yeah, the 12-ish hours.
11 and 3 quarters.
I can say thankfully that drivers like Ash Walsh and who was the other gentleman? Oh yeah, John Martin. They were involved in a horrific smash up at the top of the mountain that effectively stopped the race early. But the good news is they're okay, especially if you look at what's left of John Martin's Mercedes AMG. You're like, ooh, you shudder to think if that was a right-hand drive car. Robin Frins. We always thought that Robin Frins was going to win a race on a Formula E race weekend, and by goodness, he did it, along with Stuart Leonard and Dries Van Thor for Audi Sport Team WRT. That was Audi's first win at the 12-hour since 2012, and Lawrence Van Thor, Dries' older brother, had the greatest quote of congratulations.
Oh,
congratulations to my little asshole brother for winning the Bathurst 12 hours.
But I say this about Brother Ryan on a constant basis. It's great.
They arguably would not have finished this race. In fact, Robin was saying they wouldn't have finished this race if it had gone the distance.
Wow. So they were that far up the creek in terms of fuel.
I mean, right. Robin is quite a pessimist, to be fair.
True.
When he's awake. True.
Yeah. All I'm saying is it was a bad week. It was a bad couple of weekends to be Christopher Meese of Audi Sport, penalized for that BOP infraction at Daytona, and then his car breaks down with 2 hours left at Bathurst while he had a chance to probably run away with it.
Not a lucky fortnight.
No. Also, if you were missing all the safety cars and full course yellows at Daytona when they set a distance record, in fact, the GTLM cars smashed the previous distance record from set in 1982. You got plenty of safety cars at Bathurst. I believe they only got to like 227 laps completed in 11 hours and 40 minutes.
That's really not a lot, jeez.
Yeah, that isn't a lot. Of course, Bathurst has spots where it's tricky to retrieve cars that are literally stricken at the top of the mountain, because obviously you can't like crane them off, because there are some places where it's literally impossible. You have to go get a flatbed truck, drive it all the way up the mountain, and then drive it all the way back down again. Oh, and Chaz Mostert, who set pole position, by the way, managed to throw away all of his goodwill in the last 2.5 hours of the race by causing an avoidable wreck.
Ugh.
Oh, Chaz, why you gotta do this?
Oh, man.
I enjoyed watching and listening into both of those races. I would say, maybe depending on your perspective, probably this wasn't one of the best Bathurst 12 hours. This was an interesting Rolex 24 at Daytona. It may not be your cup of tea if you don't enjoy like curb stomping beat 'em downs at like races where like everybody, like all but four cars, finish up the lead lap, but it was good in its own right.
Sure. Like it still draws in many a crowd on Twitter, I'll say that much. Like, even though like this wasn't like, I remember like the hype for this event started, I think, a couple of years ago, when I still am mesmerized by how great Catherine Legg was in the first 3 hours in the Delta Wing a couple of years back.
Oh my gosh, you know Catherine Legg finished second in GT Daytona.
She did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
And she has been having a really good time in GT racing recently. Like, just towards the end of the season, there was the WeatherTech race. I can't think what it was, apart from Brandon.
As I pointed out to King, it was very fitting. Yeah, as I pointed out to King, it was very fitting that on a race held on the day that Kart's assets were sold away to Open Wheel Racing Series back in 2004, that we had Sebastian Bourdais, Catherine Legg, and AJ Allmendinger all in contention to win their categories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old school? Very much so. Very much so. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying, RJ, that I think by now the full repeat of Rolex is on YouTube now, on the YouTube channel. Is that
yes, and yep. you can pretty much watch the entire Bathurst live stream back as well. Go check it.
Awesome.
Just check out the Rolex 24 and the IMSA channel, and go check out the Bathurst 12-hour wherever you can find it.
Yeah. And I'll say, I didn't get to watch very much of this because I was at work for both days of the weekend, which is kind of a bummer on that one for the Rolex 24s. It is like the only IMSA race I do genuinely make an effort to watch because I am a terrible motorsports fan and I will embrace this. But I did get
That's
to
fine.
See Lance Stroll out there in the wet. But like, Lance Stroll was killing it out there for the very time I saw out there. So like, Stroll is going to be so good one day. He's going to be so, so good. Yeah.
Lance Stroll, he learned nothing from Felipe Massa.
Yeah,
he certainly didn't learn anything about wet weather driving.
That's yeah, true. Like that'd be fun. Like him, Lando Norris as well. Awesome. Keep an eye on those guys. They are going to be excellent racers one day. Oh, let's talk a little bit about the Race of Champions as well. And it's
show of hands. Who actually watched the Race of Champions?
I didn't, but I heard they had brought in an Indy Lights champion, Joseph Newgarden.
Indy Lights.
Notable for winning the Indy Lights championship in 2011, and...
Of course.
Don't know what he did. He's...
Don't know what he
did. What happened to him? Has he been up to much lately?
Who knows? Maybe it's like a Peter Dempsey story. Wins the 4-wide finish at the Freedom 100 and goes on to do absolutely nothing afterwards. Probably same thing here. But great to see Joseph turn back up.
Nice. Good to see him down there with some of the lads, some of his Penske teammates as well, like JPM and Ohelio was enjoying himself. Him and the folks down there in Riyadh as well. But I'd say a special shout out to one of our favourite guys on this show, Mr. Fingerwag himself. I know you're listening, Brandon. Congratulations out there, man. That was awesome out there. Great to see esports represented so well down there, with not only Team Sim Racing taking part in the Nations Cup, but also having their own esports event down there as well, which is really, really cool. And
he got in the goddamn car.
Yeah.
Like... Brendan, like, I really like Brendan. I've got loads of respect for him. He's a really lovely dude. For a teenager who's had to, like, take some pretty fucking horrible criticism on Twitter, he's, very robust, as well as incredibly talented and funny. And he signed up to do the Race of Champions, as in actually drive it, having never driven a road car.
That's bonkers.
I love
he was
that.
Just like, yeah, sure, do it. And you know what? I would do the same thing, and I respect that attitude. I have driven a road car, so I can't do the same thing. But, but would I insist that I could drive a Formula One car or some bullshit? Absolutely. So, like, that's more of the attitude that we need from racing. Obviously it's very difficult to compete with people who have literally won motorsport championships. But he certainly didn't disgrace himself. Big respect for just like rocking up and being like, yeah, I'll drive the thing.
Of course, the one thing that would have been better than having a world championship is having no world championships.
The race of non-champions.
The David Coulthard Invitational.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
David
well, he
Coulthard.
Does have a championship now, though.
What did Joseph
he won the race
be...
of champions. That means he's the champion.
Of champions.
One day, Joseph Newgarden
I'd be really
be
fascinated
be
to find out
him.
How much he gets paid for that shit.
Yeah, well, David Coulthard ran the table. He was undefeated in his group and ran through the entire knockout stage without a single race loss.
I'm not disgruntled about this after the year before's event. Not, I'm just throwing this out there. Like, I'm not salty about this at all. It's like it's not been a good week for my sports.
Well,
team,
though,
okay?
Big shout out to the sim driver who was in the Race for Champions, Rudy Van Buren. His fastest lap time was actually, he didn't finish bottom of his group. He got one win, which in his group, Timo Bernard didn't get a single win. His fastest lap time was better than Rene Rast, Lando Norris, Joseph Newgarden, the Saudi home team.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And yeah, shout out to Rene again. World's fastest game win in the McLaren eSports contest earlier this year. Actually, earlier last year, I should say, technically. But yeah, that was another very impressive thing to keep an eye on as well.
Mm. Should we talk about the opposite side of sim racing as it pertains to motorsport in the news? Andre, who doesn't have an active iRacing.com subscription right now?
Apparently the guy who had a boner that big a few years ago when he was in F1. Yes, it's
okay,
it's
but
Scott
you
Speed.
Don't have to throw me under the bus.
It's Scott Speed, ladies and gentlemen, and I read this in shock. Like it's like, wait, former Formula One driver gets banned from iRacing, and I'm like, huh?
Yeah, like it is actually a pretty widespread issue on iRacing where actual racing drivers would go onto iRacing and just drive like complete assholes.
Is that like the, like their way of like therapy? It's like I had a really bad day, so I had to go on iRacing and ruin other people's day with like non-real cars instead because I can. Is that like some sort of like deep therapeutic cleansing process or some
shit? I have no idea.
And it's bizarre. I just like just wow. I just don't understand this at all.
And for context, there is some global rallycross content. What is Scott Speed's series of choice? That's right, it's global rallycross.
Of course. Jeez. It's like Scott Speed in 2006 was the first American driver to compete in Formula One in 13 years, confirmed to the driver that iRacing had suspended his account. The sanction follows a week in which Speed was captured on a live stream pursuing and trying to wreck a fellow racer. Speed, in a comment to the drive, insinuated that his actions were retribution for being wrecked himself earlier in the race. I quote, "The penalty for my action, if protested against, is a suspension, which I accept and received," he said. "I personally feel like a man protesting a guy who I just accidentally wrecked out of the lead for returning the favour. But that's me, and I understand that thinking is not treating iRacing with the appropriate amount of respect and is wrong. For that, I sincerely apologise."
The thing you should take note of is because it was captured on a live stream. If it wasn't, like, if there was no footage at all, nothing would have happened.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like the internet is out here. The internet has receipts. It remembers these things. I always thought it was quite funny. It's kind of crazy when one of the first people I saw commented on this was like probably the biggest rising streamer in motorsports circles. That's Jimmy Broadbent talking about this, and I was like, what's Jimmy doing talking about Scott Speed? And I'm like, oh shit, Scott Speed got suspended. What? What is going on here? So I thought that to be very bizarre, but something we had to mention.
What does
it's
getting
like
suspended from iRacing due to your super license?
That is an interesting question. Like, we might have to take some points off it. Like, should we just put it in a block of ice? And it's like, you know what? We'll put it in a 3-foot thick block of ice. And tell Scott, as soon as you can get it open, you can have your license back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Scott Speed's super license is really a going concern.
It's not going to affect his main bread and butter, which is Global Rallycross. They're not going to do shit about it.
Yeah, he's a former champion.
Could I also tell you about this briefly about the story about how Stoffel Vandoorne, when he was in Formula Renault Euro Cup, was actually accused of using grip hats to be successful in Formula Sim race events? That's basically the cut and dry of it. Of course, this was before he became McLaren's hope of the future, Stoffel Vandoorne.
And also, I should correct myself. Scott Speed is not the former champion. He is the reigning, defended, undisputed, 3-time world global rallycross champion.
I was about to say, didn't he win it there?
Yeah, this is kind of like seeing the aforementioned Michael Van Gurn for the last episode just rock up at a pub game and just cough behind the players, a la Justin Pipe, just blowing air horns while they're on the throw for a double.
Or be like Adrian Lewis did last week and basically put a hand on a guy.
Oh my god, we had Darts Fight Club. We had Darts Fight Club bringing our two favorite tastes together.
Audrey, did you see this?
Yes, I did. There wasn't much punching going on. He grabbed his neck, but that was just like, oh shit, this might as well just be fisticuffs.
Oh my god, it's like darts, you get a lot of pettiness. Yeah, you get a lot of quote unquote like skirmishes. But like, on a side note, we've got to talk about this because like we are darts guys on this show, and like Adrian Lewis is like a hilarious character in his own right. He's like he's got the world's most fragile ego, but he's also the world's nicest guy when he's in a good mood. But like seeing Adrian Lewis point fingers at this guy during a qualifying event for the UK Open next
week. This is a goddamn floor event in front of an audience of zero. Like, in front of a live audience of zero.
Yeah, it's like it was just a stream basically, and that was it. And he's putting hands on a man's neck. I'm like, what the hell? Crazy stuff. I don't think Lewis has tweeted about it since, funnily enough, but he has been suspended by the PDC while it's under investigation. But oh my god, like what the hell, Adrian? What the hell are you doing? Anyway, like
better
like,
than Scott Speed, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. You know, catch these hands, I guess. But, whew. Yeah,
you could tell that the NASCAR mentality is really rubbed off on Scott Speed. If he's talking about, like, he wrecked me, I'm gonna wreck him back.
Yeah. At least he didn't go, like, full Nelson Piquet.
Don't ever go full Nelson Piquet. And if you're going to go full Nelson Piquet, like, aim for the body, not the helmet. Don't forget that.
My teammate, that's the Nelson Piquet.
No teasers needed.
None.
Yeah,
none
whatsoever. You just kick him in the dick and you just run.
Ryan King, want me to never get into a fight with you? Jesus. Just kick him in the dick and run away.
That's the Nelson Piquet strategy.
Sounds like a plan, yo. Sounds like a plan.
He proceeded to hit my face with his...
As a Formula E journalist, I have to issue that I do not believe these things about Nelson Piquet.
No.
Make these allegations.
It's not allegedly. This actually happened in a NASCAR truck series.
Oh, yes, it did.
This happened in a NASCAR... Yeah.
Wait, yes, I do remember
Nelson
this.
Piquet actually did this.
Yes, he did do that, didn't he? Oh, fair play. Carry on.
Okay. On the subject of Brazilian second-generation drivers who have driven in NASCAR and now drive open wheelers, Dale Coyne are about to confirm that Pietro Fittipaldi and Zachary Clayma DeMello, or Pietro Zachary Clayma Fitta DeMello Paldi, as they call them, are going to split the number 19 car.
# two guys, one car.
King, go away. King, I'm gonna fight you.
Like, what? I'm just stating fact. I'm not making any obscure references, Dre.
Pietro Fittipaldi will start his schedule at Phoenix. ISM Raceway.
That's still so weird to say.
It'll be the second round of the championship. Fittipaldi will also drive the Indianapolis Grand Prix, the Indianapolis 500. The Texas Oval, and then the road courses at Mid-Ohio, Portland, and Sonoma, with Zachary Clayma getting the other races and potentially a fourth Indy 500 car alongside Sebastian Bourdais, Pippa Mann, and Pietro Fittipaldi.
R.I.P. TBA.
Yeah, the sad news that the TBA is ending their career in IndyCar.
Nah,
on a hiatus.
TBA will return next year.
He's taking a Mickey Hakkinen length sabbatical.
Oh goodness. How strong of you are a believer in the theory that you can only beat who's ahead of you?
Very strong.
Strongly.
Very strong.
I don't support this view, but that's because I work in Formula E.
Pietro Fittipaldi had 6 wins in a championship previously won by the likes of the aforementioned Robin Frins and also Carlos Sainz Jr., Robert Kubica, and Kevin Magnussen. But it wasn't a very good field in Formula V8.
Just so we can reiterate, one of the reasons why Pietro Fittipaldi decided to come to IndyCar, not Formula 2, is because Fittipaldi received 0 super license points for winning the championship last season, because Formula V8 couldn't keep the minimum of having at least 12 drivers in every round, so they forfeited their rights to any super license points.
Yikes. That's brutal.
It's a shame, because Formula V8 3.5 has been like... obviously Renault themselves abandoned it a while ago, but it's been a really good racing series, and I was sad to see it go.
Indeed.
I actually genuinely rate young Fittipaldi, and kind of have like a slightly great anecdote from Marrakesh with him.
Didn't he do really well at the rookie test too?
He did all right, actually. Yeah. I mean, the thing about the rookie test is, like, they were rookies, but the teams were genuinely testing. Testing time in season for Formula E is pretty limited on the current cars. So you can't necessarily judge any times off what they were doing. It wasn't right. The fastest, but it was far from the slowest either. Him and Paul de Resta seemed to do a good job for Jaguar. Jaguar seemed pretty pleased. He seemed to have enjoyed himself. So there's not very many flights into or out of Manara during January relative to any other period of the year. So a lot of us were getting like slightly odd flights. I booked my flights to Marrakesh very late, as I assume Pietro did as well. And it turned out that he was travelling back to London. So we got on a plane that was going to Lisbon with an awful lot of people, including the entire of the Monte Carlo-based Venturi team, and like a whole bunch of people who live in Monaco, like Alan McNeish and James Ruster. And Paul de Resta, all of whom somehow saw me at an airport terminal and like gravitated, like, this woman must know which gate we're meant to be at. And I was like, I don't know what you think, you're going to the same place as me, but okay. The entire of the airport was just riddled with Formula E at this point, so it was like everyone recognised each other. So we get the flight to Lisbon and we're all changing, and they all go to Nice, I assume, or some similarly close location. We get the flight onwards to London, which involves me and Pietro standing in the kind of like doorwell of a airport transfer bus for like, it was probably only 15 minutes, but it was a really sweaty 15 minutes. Like kind of trying not to look at each other whilst about 3 centimetres apart from each other.
Write your own jokes in, people.
Yeah, it was an intense,
there's your fanfic.
Uncomfortable end to the weekend, but he, you know, we all got our flights, he seemed fine, he went back to wherever he lives in London. He's a nice lad, and he's a grafter, which like not everyone from a racing dynasty is, but he's earnest, he's a grafter. He's not as young as he looks, because I thought he must be about 14.
Right, you know.
Anyone born after 1989 must still be about 7 years old, because surely that's recent.
Like Hazel, keep thinking. I was born in 92. Keep thinking that.
He's 21. Yeah, 21. He's 21 officially, but he's a child compared to Zachary Clayman DeMello, who is turning 19 this year.
Or IndyCar, or whatever he's doing. I know what the US racing series mean. good luck to him, and I hope he does well. And like, if he's done fairly well in V8 3.5, which actually did have some, although it wasn't a big field, a lot of the field was quite competitive, because there were quite a few people who, like, if you look at Tom Dillman, had been in there for a really long time, which Tom wasn't in it last year, but like, you end up with a build up of expertise in 3.5. And also 3.5 is obviously pure combustion, so that experience will map very well onto going into an IndyCar as opposed to going into something like a hybrid.
I mean, they run turbos in IndyCar
or Formula E. So yeah, I, you know, go on, Pietro, have a good time.
Hazel, don't worry. If the races will be up on YouTube quickly enough, you'll be able to follow them. I will give you updates on them.
Jimmy Vassar's back too.
Oh god.
Jimmy Vassar's bought into part of Dale Coyne, specifically the number 18 car, which looks gorgeous, by the way. So do those two fuzzy vodka cars. I never thought I'd be throwing praise to Fuzzy Zeller in any one of his endeavors, but man, those cars, especially Piggott's number 21, god.
Yeah, so they picked the right shade of green for that Carpenter cars this year.
The number 18 team is now Dale Coyne Racing, with Vassar as in Jimmy, the 1996 champion, and Sullivan as in... Wait, who's the Sullivan? Is it the same Sullivan from KBSH?
Yes. I think it is. It's James Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, like, the livery is stunning. Yeah.
It looks like a late 90s Jordan.
It does, like the whole like Benson and Hedges, and like, you know, the whole like, I don't know what the hell they call it at the front of the car on the side of like the mouth. That was really cool. That's one of my favorite ever racing liveries.
Admittedly, the Coyne car, the render looks terrible, but when you saw the car at testing, it looks much better in real life than in the render.
Similar to the one we had revealed today, Tuesday, February the 6th, can you have strong feelings about Scott Dixon's new sponsor?
Ooh, yes. Scott Dixon's new sponsor is PNC Bank, which is my bank. And, yeah, most likely the reason why they decided to become Scott Dixon's sponsor, because he drives for Chip Ganassi Racing, and Chip Ganassi's from Pittsburgh, and PNC Bank is a Pittsburgh bank.
Did Chip, like, literally walk into his local branch and go, you know, guys, I've got a great idea for
yes.
you.
Yes, literally, Chip Ganassi and Chip Ganassi Racing are both customers of PNC Bank.
Of course they are. That's the most Chip thing I've ever heard in my life.
just put some French fries right in the middle of that sub sandwich,
oh
buddy.
Oh my god. Like, quote from Chip. As a Pittsburgh native, PNC was a trusted brand I grew up with. I opened my first account as a teenager, and that relationship later expanded to include my business financing.
This is going to get really awkward in case Chip Ganassi ever finds any trouble with his business soon.
Oh my god.
Can I just say that after Thomas Webb said it to me on Twitter, I can no longer see that car as PNC. It's the Iron Brew car.
It is the Iron Brew car. Nah. It is very blue, and like if this was OSW review, like the watt bar for that car would absolutely be an Iron Brew.
Nah, I just need to look at my credit card to realize it's not.
Now, I am going to make up a wee box of sweets, and it's going to be all Iron Brew bars.
I still think,
and I know we talked about this earlier, but I still think the season 2 Andretti Formula E car was more Iron Brew.
Oh my goodness, yeah. It was basically, yeah, it reminded me of the Blue Falcon from the F-Zero games more
yes.
than anything.
Yes!
Uh-huh. It absolutely was. Like, I'm not denying that for a second. That was absolutely what it was. Whew! But, guys, I think we're just about done here.
We got one big story left.
Oh, yeah.
IndyCar is, you know, testing...
Oh, not that one.
Yeah, testing their windscreen at which I'm just going to say the Raceway in Phoenix, because I'm not using their corporate name.
No, fuck that. I'm never going to get used to it. I'm not going to even try and get used to it.
It is weird that they've named the Raceway fuck that.
it is not the first time that has happened in the United States. Charlotte Motor Speedway, who decided to, we're going to be like Lowe's Motor Speedway after that Lowe's hardware store.
Autodrome Speedway, formerly California Speedway.
Yes.
The annual challenge of Spielberg.
But King, I didn't want to upset the F1 fans by talking about the bloody shield, you know.
No, it's a windscreen here, Dre. It's a windscreen.
Sorry, my bad. I forgot the technical term.
Because anytime we mention the shield, we have to play, you know, Shield's entrance music.
Oh, you mean the one with the acronym?
Yeah, yes.
Of course.
Sierra Hotel, India, Echo, Lima, Delta, Shield.
but quite right, and like, guess what, guys? All the IndyCar fans really like the look of it. They think it's all right, you know. So it's like everything's gonna be okay now. Okay, motorsport is saved.
Yeah, and then all the F1 fans are like, "Why can't we have that?" Mm-hmm. Which is like, we don't even know if it actually works yet. Calm down.
I mean, one of the things is like why they're going more towards the windscreen than the halo is because they race on ovals, and if you have a crash in an oval, the chances are that crash isn't going to involve your car going into a wall.
And I think it's more of a visibility issue, because on the ovals, because they're banked, drivers have to be looking up, and if they're looking up, there's something in the way if you have a halo.
That too, but I think it's also a safety thing. It works. If it was like F1, it's just roads and street courses, it'd be fine.
I mean, the halo structurally would be fine in IndyCar, because it is, it's the halo is a part of the monocoque, like it's a part of the chassis. So if the chassis breaks, you have way bigger problems than the halo if your monocoque breaks during a crash.
Yep.
Okay.
But yep, IndyCar decided to make a prototype windscreen designed and manufactured by PPG, which is like a very advanced plastics company. It's made out of like OptiCore material, which I'm not sure how to describe it, but it's the same material that they use in like aircraft windows. So they're designed to like deflect bird strikes.
Sounds reasonable enough.
But the biggest issue that you get with any like canopy system, which it's refraction. It's like it's the same thing if you look into a pool. Like you're not seeing one for one what's under the water. It's, you know, refracted.
Yeah, because this was the problem when Vettel and a couple of the other drivers tested the windshields in F1, and they were just like, wow, that makes me feel like super nauseous. Because the refraction, yikes. And also the fact that because it's not a total cockpit, you can kind of see over the top, and because drivers use so much of their periphery, it's just like you've got bits that are refracted, bits that aren't.
Yeah, and you don't see these issues in like military aircraft or things like that, because the people don't realize how much larger the cockpits are compared to like a single seater race car, where like an aircraft canopy is like about like 5 times the size of like the stuff that you like the shield and the windscreen are. So like refraction is an even bigger issue because of how tight the curvature is.
That they're having Scott Dixon test it.
Yeah, so
of course.
So like,
so it's going to be a success.
so what PPG are thinking about doing, like what they're trying to do, is trying to make the windscreen as thin as possible to limit refraction. So basically, they're trying to make it thin enough to limit refraction, but still thick enough for it to be safe.
I'm presuming they're going to be they're going to have had a couple of different models made.
Yes, yes. And that's why, like, if you compare this to F1 Shield, the windscreen is actually slightly larger. It's placed further away from the driver, so refraction hopefully will be less. Like, they're just trying to... They know it will work, but they're, like, trying to make it as comfortable for the driver as possible.
Do we really need driver input, though? I mean, the windscreen would just be more pretty than a halo.
I mean, it's pretty key in most sports to just never ask the drivers anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ask them for their opinions of anything. But I do want to try and sign off here on one note. I think that everybody should value at least one driver's opinion on the world today. Sitting in Best Buy parking lot, waiting for it to open. Dude parked next to me doing the same. Black spray painted Honda Accord, jamming death metal, vaping, wearing a Clint Boyer hat. Hashtag America. 10:08 a.m. February 6, 2018. Ralph Dale Earnhardt Jr. at Dale Jr.
Oh my god.
Daytona 500's in 2 weeks, y'all.
Boy.
The first part of Danica's farewell tour.
Before we get off this recording, I just want to say that, like, just right at the end there, one of you mentioned Lewis. And I finally realised that all of these asides that you've been making to Lewis are to the guy who edits.
No. Yes.
And not, like, a really weird series of, like, slightly meme-y comments to Lewis Hamilton.
Nope.
Quite frankly, I've just been
living a slightly different world to all of you for this podcast.
But hey, that's because you were under the impression that this podcast was going to start recording about an hour and 10 minutes earlier than it actually did.
Whoops. Yes. Yeah, so I'm in a different timeline now. I'm one of the diversified.
I'm in the correct timeline.
No, I want to be in the timeline where Lewis Hamilton listens to this show and might even edits it.
Well, he's got a lot of studio equipment.
Yeah. What about the one where James Hinchcliffe is on our homepage?
I have no objections to this, may I add. I have no objections to this.
We do have the one thing. We mentioned all the IndyCar liveries that came out. We have to mention this livery, Danica Patrick's livery for her hopefully last Daytona 500.
Five minutes in Microsoft Paint.
Could somebody put it in the chat?
I built that livery using a popular web domain supplier. And their pre-built options.
Was it Wix? Was it Squarespace? Because it certainly wasn't GoDaddy.
Wait a minute, guys, I've not seen this yet. Somebody put it in the chat. You can get a live reaction out of me.
Live reactions here to Danica Patrick.
Get it.
2015 Indianapolis Daytona 500 livery.
Yeah, I'll link her Twitter post with the pictures.
Give me a sec. Like you'll get a live reaction out of your friendly neighborhood host in just a second.
Okay. It's in the chat. Have fun.
Let's have a look.
Oh, damn. That's bad.
What the fuck is that?
Let's look at it from the three-quarter perspective.
I mean, one of the things that this really flags, and, like, I don't know, I mean, this is a little bit, like, not sticking to sports here, but, like, why are GoDaddy still using a logo that I think is, like, one of the kind of, like, office stock photos of, like, please remember to tidy the kitchen or whatever, from, like, Windows 95's clip art? Like, how is that...
It's not great.
How is that still a thing that they're using? And putting on a race car.
Can I just say, I love how it's still on... It's Danica in whatever the double.
Danica double.
She's still to get a ride confirmed in IndyCar.
Yeah, she doesn't have an IndyCar ride yet. She didn't... A month ago, she didn't have this ride. But she yet announced her retirement and retirement tour without any racing seats.
That's got fucking balls, forward. Man. Like, I respect the shit out of Danica Patrick, and, like, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm being flippant here, but...
Yeah, you don't want to know the story how we got up to this point. It does not make Danica Patrick look good or intelligent.
No. But keep that pristine image.
Yeah, keep that image.
I mean, you just have... Rahel Letterman Lanigan had a statement the other day, which basically went, no, we're not having her as a driver. No, we're not. We want to focus on doing well in the series. We want to focus well on doing well in the entire season. And having the media circus around her will not be good for us trying to do well in the season.
Yeah, pretty...
She basically called Danica a distraction. Yeah,
and pretty much that was the same statement that every other major team in IndyCar put out after she announced that she was going to come back to Indianapolis, that we won't be running Danica Patrick.
The first two being the two teams that she raced with, Andretti Autosport and Rahel Letterman Lanigan Racing.
Because at that point in time, Danica Patrick had zero sponsors. And her last sponsor failed to pay her team money.
But they did get prime advertising on an Emmy Award-winning Fox television spot.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's not pretty. Oh, it's not pretty. But hey, best of luck to her. Just a shame the livery is so shit. But you know,
I just hope she makes it the whole 500 miles incident free, so I don't have people complaining on the internet.
Can't have that.
Side note.
I mean, I don't like to be a pessimist here, but it's possible that regardless of what happens in the Indy 500, somebody's going to complain on the internet.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of inevitability, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I try, oh, God, how I try to believe that maybe, I don't know, maybe this will be the year that we get through an F1 season without people complaining on the internet. When we actually get to it, obviously people have complained on the internet up until now, but maybe when it starts, this will usher in a new era of harmony and peace, and nobody will complain on the internet, and perhaps there won't be any men in my mentions.
I despair.
I mean, maybe this is just me being old. Like, you know, I'm 31 in 2 days' time, and 1 day's time now. I've just lost that sense of magic. But I think people are. What maybe my biggest prediction for motorsport in 2018 is that some fuckers sure are going to complain on the internet.
Yeah, that's
a given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God, I hate individualism with a passion. that's a bit of an over exaggeration, but fine, we'll close on that.
Yeah, and on that note, it's time to end the show. But just before we go, Hazel, tell the good people at home where they can find you.
So you can find me. I write for eracing.net. I write for Crash sometimes. I write for Drive Tribe now, which is exciting.
Awesome.
I write occasionally in various other places, like Medium and for Sissy Metric about different things. I still sometimes do music journalism.
Sweet.
But so for like the BBC and various other places. So you can stalk me anywhere, really. But the best place to stalk me is if you follow me on Twitter as HSouthwell, spelled all the ways you would expect, F-E, because I am the only racing journalist to have tied my flag to the electric pole. And
yeah, everyone's still
not,
in the F1
camp.
Not
gone for racing or F1, because my name's too long.
Thank you for having me. Oh, it's our pleasure. You're welcome back anytime, Hazel. God damn. It's been an absolute blast to have your insight on the show. And on a sincere note, Hazel's one of the finest writers in motorsport, in my humble opinion. So if you're not following her, what are you doing with yourselves? Get on that already. Take it from me. A good chunk of shit I've done recently has been based off some awesome journalism that Hazel. The first person that they may not have known, I mentioned it in said video, but if you never saw my video blog on the Confessions of a Closet Hamilton Fan, I would never have made that video if it wasn't for Hazel's piece about it on a Medium page. So, you know, I'm just pointing you guys in the right direction if you haven't already. But just before we go, basically you can find us one more time, YouTube and Facebook.com/Motorsport101, Twitter @ Motorsport_101, full of pictures of our selfies now, because that's always fun. thanks, RJ, for that one. I see you over there. Our Twitters, all personal Twitters as well, @ Harrison101HD, @ Ryan Eric King, @ Wee Zoe, @ RJ O'Connell, and as mentioned, @ HSouthwellFE as well. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. Again, you can back us there. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live, which will be back next week. And that'll be a special one, because it'll be episode 46. We're totally not talking about Valentino Rossi. Just saying. But also, I'll say this, I said it on Twitter earlier in the week, but I'll repeat it here as well real quick. That'll be the final fortnightly episode of Bike Live. We are going back to weekly shows in the middle of February for Bike Live. So getting ready for the World Superbike season as well. So our World Superbike season preview will be in 2 weeks' time. So check that out as well. It's bound to be great. Will Jonathan Ray make it 4 in a row? Probably. But all the good stuff heading into the 2018 World Superbike season as well, coming up real soon with me and Lewis. Right, that just about does it for this double episode of Motorsport 101. I hope you guys enjoyed both shows. And, we'll catch you guys soon. Thank you very much for listening. And sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Woo-hoo! Dean Agassi!
You've already
got to
done it, mate.
I cannot
believe you are the world champion!
Oh, I can't believe we didn't get to mention this throughout the entire 2-episode span that, man, Dre, the Patriots lost the Super Bowl.
You are all gonna pay.